The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern-day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
So scoreless between Arsenal and Atletico Madrid. Second half just getting underway at the Emirates in the Europa League semi-final. Marseille 1-0 up against Red Bull Salzburg in the other semi-final. 53106 is the text number. Nathan and Kev with you tonight on the Football Show. We're on all our social channels as well, so you can leave a comment if it's a kinder one than that one left for Richie, who's trying his best in the news round. It's not his fault he's bald and he has an annoying accent.
Actually, always not mine.
At all.
I don't think he's got an annoying accent. He's bald, obviously, but I don't think he's got an annoying accent.
The best peppermint tea around. I really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed that peppermint tea, I gotta say. So we're going to talk to Rob Harris in a little while about Wembley. Up for sale. £600 million.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is it up for sale?
That's what we're going to find out.
Yeah.
It's sort of come from nowhere, this story.
Yeah, I didn't hear nothing at all about it. And then all of a sudden today, it just comes out. So, yeah, it's... It's interesting, isn't it?
So Shahid Khan, who owns Fulham, which is another angle, could this potentially see Fulham playing Premier League games at Wembley?
Yeah.
There's complications with Chelsea obviously wanting to go there when they're redeveloping Stamford Bridge, other clubs potentially looking to use it.
Yeah.
England having to move out of Wembley at certain times and go around the country. But the main storyline seems to be about the Jaguars and whether we could see a London franchise, or whether they just want to make sure that they have a certain amount of games in London every season, as more and more NFL franchises look to come over and at least have one game and the money spinning part of that. So we're going to chat about that with Rob Harris, and we're going to go behind the scenes at Burnley. Whoa, what's going on there, Kev?
Oh, just something flashed up on my phone.
Twice.
Yeah, an update on my iPad there, yeah.
Steven Gerrard to Rangers.
Yeah. What are you thinking of that one?
I don't see the benefits...
For him.
Steven Gerrard's point of view, you're going into an absolute basket case of a club where quite simply, and maybe this is what it comes down to, quite simply you're judged on whether you can finish above one other team. Mm. So does that make it an incredibly difficult job when that other teams are so far ahead of you right now that it's impossible to see, no matter how good a manager Steven Gerrard is, you can overturn the deficit in 1 year?
Well, that can't be his remit going in there then to overturn Celtic, can it? It can't be. If you're looking at a long-term strategy, you're looking at it to say, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to give you 4 years. We'll give you a budget of X amount to so we can actually compete. But they can't compete because they don't have the budget. They're nowhere near it. They don't have the revenue. They don't have the finances going into the club. So, yeah, you're right in saying it. That is the only thing that they can do, overturn them. But they simply cannot at the moment. They won't. So... It doesn't seem logical to suggest he's going to take the job.
Is it in many ways then an impossible job, certainly for somebody of Steven Gerrard's stature, whereby you could go in, and this would be career suicide in many ways, of Steven Gerrard going
in. Yeah, it would be, but
listen, go in his first press conference and say, listen, we know we're a long way behind Celtic, but end of the first season, you're going to see improvements. We're going to play a good style of football. We're going to bring young players through. We're going to make a bit more of an investment at times as well. And we're going to be best of the rest, and we're going to close the gap on Celtic.
Won't be good enough though, would it? Because no, you go in with that sort of statement, that's the message you're giving off at the start.
It's a realistic thing to say.
It is. Well, it's exactly how it is. That's exactly what he should be saying. But if you go in with that message, then it's clear that the club are then, or the supporters of the club are saying to Steven Gerrard, where's your ambition? We want to be toppling Rangers at Celtic. We don't want to be second best, also runs. We don't want to be best of the rest.
We lose every Old Firm derby.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's ultimately what it is. It's crazy to me in my head to suggest he's going to take the job. But the only thing I would say is that, yes, it's a big club and he will get experience. So is he going in there with a mindset, well, I'll tell you what, I'll stay 2 years, I've got the experience of managing a club, albeit, yes, they're not necessarily competitive in their own league, seriously competitive in their own league, but I have got the experience of managing a club that's in a difficult position. That could stand him in good stead for the rest of his coaching and managerial career. That's the only way you could actually judge that, to conceivably think he's going to take it.
All right, let's talk to Rob Harris from Associated Press, who is on the line, a football writer, about this story that broke today about Jacksonville Jaguars owner Shahid Khan
offering to buy Wembley Stadium from the FA, offering around £600 million, which would see the English national team continue to play games at Wembley. They'd retain the rights to hospitality packages for games, which is valued at around £300 million, so essentially a £1 billion deal for the FA. But at certain stages of the season, they may well have to play games away from Wembley. Rob, good to talk to you. We were just saying, this feels like it came out of nowhere, this story today. Had there been rumblings that there was interest in buying Wembley from certain parties and that the FA might actually be open to offers?
No, I mean, it was one of those stories that came completely out of nowhere and has actually sort of kept pretty much under the radar, which in sport is obviously pretty rare. In fact, across business, it's pretty rare that such a deal can suddenly emerge. And, you know, I've not really heard that much noteworthy opposition to it yet.
Has there been any real official reaction from the FA?
Yeah, and they've actually confirmed the bid has come in. Certainly the message from within the FA is the fact they see it as a positive, and the fact that the money could be reinvested into grassroots football, into projects across England. And you certainly hope, if the money is invested in the right way, it goes into the right projects, the fact it does actually ultimately deliver what is the FA's ethos, which is, and its mission, which is to invest in football.
Rob, Shahid Khan said today, he said, "Shall we be fortunate to close on this purchase, it's important to stress that the spirit and essence of Wembley will be unchanged." I think he's talking there from the on-field sort of side of it. But, of course, we know the FA's headquarters are at Wembley now. Would that change in relation to that? Would they have to find a different base for themselves going forward?
Well, I think a lot of Wembley staff might prefer not to be at Wembley. There are still many who sort of preferred it at Soho Square in central London. And, it's not the most convenient place for some. But, I was speaking to Shahid Khan myself this afternoon, and, you know, he's very much committed to keeping Wembley as a football venue, knowing that it is the home of football, is very much respecting of the heritage of the place. And, you know, he's aware that it's going to be hosting the finals, semi-finals and other games at Euro 2020 in a couple of years. So he recognises that sort of position in, you know, the national game. As a financial deal, he made the point to me, it's on far bigger deals, let alone in recent weeks. So it's not financially that much of a burden or significance in that regard. But he realised it's a sort of a heritage point in British society.
Why does he want to buy Wembley?
Well, I mean, he sees it as an opportunity to grow NFL in the UK. He certainly knows that actually it's a way of owning it, is a way to have a foothold, a location where the game can be based. I mean, ultimately, he saw that potentially Wembley being the only home of NFL in England. And obviously, that sent a challenge to Tottenham, which has a 10-year deal starting this year to host NFL at his new stadium. But he also sees there's opportunities for growth at Wembley. You know, I was saying to Shahid Khan, how are you going to extract value out of Wembley? How are you going to make your money back? And he sees that there are opportunities to bring more sports into the place, more concerts, which would be interesting because obviously there's so many challenges in London, whether it's Olympic Stadium out in the east or Twickenham in the west. I mean, a lot of people are going after this market, and you've got the new Tottenham Stadium as well, which is obviously trying to recoup the cost there. And, there's probably a need to actually spend money investing in upgrading Wembley because it's now 10 years old, technology changes, and there's a need to modernise it.
The Jaguars already have a deal through 2020 to play games in London. Would the intention be long-term, and maybe he can't say this now for political reasons, to move the entire franchise to London, that you would end up with a London Jaguars? Or is it more that he wants to put in place a position where if there's 10 games in London, the Jaguars play 3, 4, 5 of them, that they have a certain control over the market in the city?
Well, I mean, to move a franchise requires a significant approval from the NFL teams. You also need the approval of the players. So any who are sort of committed to contracts now, it's going to be pretty difficult. But I don't think we are looking in the short term at any prospect of the Jaguars moving. I mean, you could get a scenario where Shahid Khan owns the stadium, but it's a different franchise there, whether a new one or one that moves from the States, and the Jaguars remain in Jacksonville. But it's always been a long-term ambition, even from government circles, to actually encourage to get an NFL franchise in London. But certainly, the sense of Shahid Khan today, it's not something that that's imminent at the moment, and there is still this sort of slow burn to sort of assess the appeal and actually maybe bring more games and then see, look, are we at a point where there is a market for a franchise to be based in London?
Nathan said something earlier on. It's actually come from nowhere on us. It's maybe caught us on the hop a little bit, really, when it's come about, this story. But surely if the FA are seriously considering selling Wembley. I mean, again, I don't know what negotiations have gone on, what's happened in relation to the negotiation of the stadium, but surely it would be better for them to then put it to tender, if that would be this, put it out there so they can take in buyers and obviously sell it to the highest bidder. Would that not be in the best interest at all?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing, actually, whether it's in the FA's interest for it actually to come out today, because it does potentially stoke a bidding war. I mean, you just have to look at a far bigger industry, which is the Sky Company at the moment, which obviously they have interest from Disney in terms of the takeover, then Comcast to own NBC, suddenly come in with a bigger deal when it's known, you know, that there are talks underway. So actually, with this deal now on the table and out there, there could potentially be an investor who comes in and actually wants to dump Shadcam for it. I mean, it's quite a status symbol as well, potentially, for someone looking for a foothold in not only football, but in sort of English society as well. So, this might not necessarily be the last of it. Shad Khan himself told me he certainly hopes to have this completed in the next 3 months. But, there could be obstacles on the way. I mean, people might be reflecting, of course, how there was some public money put into Wembley as well, you know, and whether that's recouped in any way.
And just in relation to matchday revenues around England games, FA Cup semi-finals, FA Cup finals themselves, that would be solely revenue generated for the FA then?
Yeah, I mean, the FA is retaining their corporate facilities, the ability to make revenue from the club Wembley. But I would expect, obviously, the FA will be renting. They'll be leasing it on match days for themselves, if they need, just in the way that Tottenham are now. So they would just be renting the stadium when they want it, or indeed the Football League for their finals. But Shad Khan is certainly committed to making sure there is no threat to England games being there, all the big cup finals staying at Wembley. But for many people, I think maybe this is why there's not been that much of a sense of a mass opposition, is the fact that a lot of England fans in particular have been talked for some time to prefer the games to be out on the road around the country. FA Cup semi-finals at Wembley isn't necessarily a universally popular thing. So actually, potentially, if they were out to Wembley, it would sort of gain more, support. But, it certainly is an interesting time. And, you know, for anyone who hasn't been there recently, the whole Wembley area has changed considerably in the last few years. There's a lot more building work going on. You've got apartments now basically right up to virtually the gates of Wembley because of the way the deal was done many years ago, where the FA only bought the land that Wembley itself is on, not the entire sort of area, which meant that the property developers have been able to sort of encroach on Wembley territory even more next to the stadium and sort of build up and build up.
Are the FA a wealthy organisation?
The stadium has been problematic for some years in terms of the requirement to sort of pay off the building costs, to pay off the debt. And one of the things that Martin Glenn, the chief executive, actually did in recent years is try to refinance that debt, make it more sustainable, and to sort of manage those costs down. But, you know, it certainly is a profitable organisation, obviously one of the big money makers in world football. They would say, actually, this, as I was saying earlier, this extra revenue coming in is an ability to actually put more centres around the country to actually develop football. I think what a lot of people would hope is that if they are going into building new projects or new development centres, these are accessible. They aren't sort of charging big fees even for people to still use them. And in fact, this is really a sort of money that goes back into the grassroots where it's available to all.
Why now, though, Rob? Then, so say you've 11 years, since Wembley the new Wembley's opened. You've probably got six more years, essentially, is what they're saying, until the debt would be paid off in total. Why now, then? Why has this come about now? Why are they seriously considering it now? Is it just simply the financial sum? But surely, like, you've got 6 years to pay the stadium off, and then you can actually think about a plan going forward, how you can seriously generate money going in for the FA. Surely, I mean, in my mind, that would be more beneficial for them, no?
Yeah, I think they should actually produce some sort of proper report that actually shows and discusses the viability, the feasibility, the sense of actually selling Wembley now. I mean, you don't want to end up in a situation where in years to come, actually, they're sort of not quite shortchanged, but actually it was the wrong decision. I mean, someone who used to work around there just said to me this evening that, you know, you'd expect the FA often do have a final way of modelling things up in this situation. So even on the face of it, it might seem wise, and they're getting this windfall that, you know, if it's not managed properly, as things occasionally aren't at the FA, then there is a potential for this that higher. I mean, you just see various decisions in the last year involving whether it's the England women's team and various other matters where they've been hauled in front of the parliamentary committee to answer questions over how they run the plays. So actually, I think it does need some sort of oversight in terms of whether this is the right move now, and just to manage what is a significant windfall that would be coming into the FA.
Would Martin Glenn have been pleasantly pleased and perhaps somewhat surprised by the reaction to this news today? Because I guess there might have been an anticipation that there was a battle ahead for the hearts and minds of the English football supporter and the storied history of Wembley and the home of English football. Whereas what you're saying there, actually, it's sort of been welcomed with a shrug of the shoulders. And if this does actually mean a £500 million windfall that can be invested into grassroots, this could be a real win for the FA.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I mean, Martin Glenn has had some issues in recent months in terms of some public statements, various issues as well around their handling of issues around the women's team as well, which had sort of unsettled him to a degree. So obviously this sort of really shows him his strength, which is as a as a man behind commercial deals in terms of actually how you structure organisations and very much, you know, involved in the day-to-day administration. But I would sort of probably wait to see some of the morning paper reaction once columnists start to express their views, because you could get a sense of nostalgia around Wembley, in the sense that it is being sold off abroad, some might see. But actually, Wembley's only really been in the FA's hands this century. I mean, it was the PLC before then. It's not been the FA's property for most of its existence. So they're not really selling off a crown jewels, as it were, that's been sort of in the FA's hands, which sort of might temper some of the reaction, if there is some. But, I think in Shad Khan, there is someone who actually at least does engage with the public. He's not one of these American owners who sort of hides away and doesn't communicate. You know, he is someone who at least explains, which is probably something of reassurance if those people who might have sort of questions around the deal or surprise around it, you know, the fact that they sort of speaking to reporters, at least is something where, you know, we can ask every question we have. And he certainly recognises that, you know, its status in the country. And, just a few weeks ago, we were hearing on the FA side that Martin Glenn, his own future might be in some uncertainty, with the chairman, Greg Clark, actually turning to headhunters to potentially find a replacement for Martin Glenn, which was portrayed very much as a precautionary measure just in case that there was a need to change the chief executive, which sort of reflected his uncertainty over his future. But certainly Martin Glenn insists he's going nowhere, but probably completing a deal this size would be something that would sort of be a lift to his reputation.
Just before we let you go, Rob, all the talk has been about the Jacksonville Jaguars and what this deal may mean for the NFL in London. Worth remembering that Shad Khan also owns Fulham, who may well be back in the Premier League within the next couple of weeks. Has there been any talk about what this may mean for Fulham and if there's any possibility that they may end up using Wembley?
I was going to say, I was relatively surprised it took so long to get onto Fulham, actually. But it might seem surprising to some, the fact that, you know, Shad Khan would own two stadiums in London, not far apart. And, particularly Fulham on prime property territory there, right next to the Thames. But Shad Khan's insistent, the fact that Fulham will stay at Craven Cottage, and the two are unconnected. He will continue with the redevelopment work there.
Right.
And, he recognises the place Fulham actually does have as part of that community in there, and actually, you know, that you can't just transport it as well. And I think many would say, actually, because Fulham does not have that fan base, that large fan base, certainly at the moment, that would immediately transport into a 90,000-seat stadium. But certainly, talking to him earlier, I was sort of saying, could you envisage a situation where you do use Wembley for Fulham? I don't know. Quite useful if you ever reach the Champions League and you might need a bigger stadium, he's certainly someone who does dream big, but obviously it's a long way to go for Fulham to reach that level.
All right, good stuff. Thanks a lot for taking the call. Rob Harris there, talking to us about the news that Shad Khan, the owner of Fulham and the Jacksonville Jaguars, has made a bid to buy Wembley. There's been a goal at the Emirates, and Arsenal have taken the lead against Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, absolutely brilliantly worked from Jack Wilshere and Aaron Ramsey. Lovely little 1-2. Jack Wilshere gets to the byline. He stands up a lovely cross to the far post. Alexander Lacazette gets up brilliantly. downward header into the corner beyond Jan Oblak. So yeah, 1-0 Arsenal.
Remember, this is an Atletico side who've been playing with 10 men since the 10th minute. Now, Carling, official beer of the Premier League, is bringing you closer to the Premier League. And thanks to Carling, you could win tickets to a Premier League game of your choice next season for you and a friend, with return flights, accommodation and €250 spending money all included. For your chance to win, simply identify our mystery voice, who says, Kev can be a little bit clingy on nights out.
Just wouldn't leave off and stand next to you and just follow you everywhere.
Text your name and answer to 53106 for 30 cents. We will announce the fourth of this week's finalists for that prize by the end of the show. Terms and conditions apply. Always remember to drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for more info. Time for ads.
Off the ball. This is News Talk.
Welcome back to Thursday's football show. Nathan and Kev in studio this evening. So Arsenal, thanks to Alexandre Lacazette, 1-0 up against Atletico Madrid. 20 minutes remaining at the Emirates in the first leg of their Europa League semi-final. And Marseille have just gone 2-0 up against Salzburg in France. It's been a good night for the Premier League flops. Florian Thauvin opened the scoring, and then Clinton Ingie.
Yeah.
Who didn't really get much of a chance after a big money move to Spurs, has scored the second.
Mm. Thauvin's actually a very good player. I saw him before he went there to Newcastle from Marseille. Just didn't happen for him. Yeah, as you say, NG, probably another one, just didn't happen for them. But yeah, it looks like at the moment, say Marseille will get through that tie. Home leg, certainly the way that it's going for them. That other one's still in the balance at the moment. I do feel Arsenal need another goal, though, just to secure that win going over there to Madrid.
Every Thursday afternoon on offtheball.com and our social channels, the Keith Andrews Show goes live. And this week, well, Keith has been practically signed up by Burnley. Himself and Joseph Conroy went over to Turf Moor a few days ago, and they got pretty decent access around the club. You can watch the whole thing up on youtube.com/offtheball. We're going to play you some of Keith's chat with Jeff Hendrick and Stephen Ward in a bit. But first, here's Keith with the Burnley manager, Sean Dyche.
Recruitment with the financial restraints and the way that this group works in terms of, I would imagine, character is a key component when you're looking at your new players, and you're also a bit wary, I think, of the loan market. Is it one player in Kudus?
Yeah, well, I think. Well, first of all, we need to imagine that our financial constraints, as you rightly call them, in many ways, but only in the Premier League. You got to remember, for Burnley Football Club to be spending £15 million on a centre forward,
it's substantial.
Exactly. But in the Premier League, believe it, well, you know anyway, that's really low. And don't forget that while we're doing that, we're getting £18 million in for the outgoing player. So, you know, you look at that, you look at Keno going for sort of 23, 24, then you've got Tarki coming in for four, or he'd come in previously for four. I'm really, really pleased with that side of things. But it is difficult, you know. It's how do you continue to make sense of that and make it work? But back to your point, it's still a lot of money for Burnley Football Club. So I'm not crying it in that we're not spending, because we are, but we just can't quite. Like, every time we catch up with ourselves, the market goes north again. So it's just that the market keeps moving. But I don't think you can cry it in. I think we've got a side that continues to develop. I think we've got a group of players who continue to improve. The recruitment side is always difficult for us. A lot of talk about why I haven't signed foreign players. It's absolutely nothing to do with being foreign. It's just the fact that our recruitment system is still not deep enough to find all of the details that we need to know about players. You know, with the Irish lads, as you know, and with the British players and the English players that we've got, we can find a lot about them. The anomaly being Stephen Defoe. We signed Stephen in 46 caps for Belgium. He's not exactly a player who's not capable.
He's had injury troubles, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And we had to get him up to speed, Premier League speed, that is, fitness, mentally and physically fit. And he was having a fantastic campaign until he got injured. So it's more about the recruitment is difficult for the numbers, even at the numbers we're talking about. And then on top of that, how deep can our recruitment go outside of these shores? And that's a big challenge for us and something that we continue to try and progress with.
I've seen you very closely over the last couple of years in particular. We've been well aware, obviously, playing against coaching it, but in the last couple of years, looking at your games in depth. This year in particular, maybe with the start that you had, I've seen a real evolution of style. Like, I'm seeing a Burnley team that is still not getting the plaudits it deserves in terms of the way you're playing. At times, you've been criticised for playing direct, playing basic football, which is underestimated in my opinion. But the way the team has developed this year in particular, I genuinely think it's been magnificent.
No, I appreciate that, and I agree. I'm bound to say, but I do agree. I think I'm a pretty honest fella, and You know, last season we had to play hard, fast football because our goal, don't forget, was purely stay in the Premier League. Yeah, and we had to do what we had to do. This year we felt we had a stronger group of players, so not necessarily all individuals, so we lost some good players, but a bigger depth of the group. I felt in training that allowed us to work on different styles. It's hard now because everyone judges you very, very quickly. And I'm not too worried about what the outside thinks because I know what my players think. You saw us train today. You know, there's a load of football for one. You know, we play endless football. Mm. But the players buy into it. You saw the tempo of training today. You know, we're getting towards the end of the season, yet the tempo's high. Yeah, the demand's high. And I think that's shown in performances. And as you rightly said, we've mixed our style better, more possession-based when we've needed to be, more counter-attack style when we needed to be away from home, because that can often be effective in the Premier League particularly. And I actually believe in that mixture. I actually am one of the rare people who I actually don't want to play like Barcelona. I want to play mixed football. I want to play football that can win football matches in any way. If you have to grind out, you can grind out. But if you can pass your way out of it and score great goals, then fantastic. But I want a team that can win in any style it needs to win. And we're getting there. We're not the real deal, by the way. But we are improving, I believe.
Europa League next year. Very much possible. 7 points from 7 games needed. Claret in Europe. Like, it's madness to think of that.
Yeah, I mean, I was just saying in the press this afternoon that, and don't get me wrong, the media offer not so much what you're doing now, but, you know, the written media, they like a spin on things, and the Europa League has its question marks because of the amount of games, etc., etc. But you've just asked me about the timeline from when I got here 5.5 years ago, and the team was 16th in the Championship and cutting everything. Mm. Well, now we're talking about possible Europa League. Well, how can that be? I can't see a negative. I can't see it. I'm just going, well, okay, you get a heavy game schedule. All right, well, is that not the Championship? We've been through that twice. You know, do you want them games in Europe? What, as a badge of honour for Burnley Football Club playing in football in Europe? Mm. How would you not want that? You know, so it's kind of, now the challenge is right there. We know that. The challenge of getting in, first of all, and then if you're in there, when you're in there, whichever way you look at it, then you've got the challenge of more games. But what I'm saying is, let's take it on. Mm. You know, if that comes our way, then be open-minded about taking it on. And there'll be enough negatives thrown at you. Mm. So we tend to concentrate on what we do and be, you know, respectful of outside noise, but we tend to believe in what we're doing in here. So first of all, see if we can get there, and then we'll be open-minded for what comes next.
Well, some of the positives that have been thrown at you this year have been links with other clubs. You've been talked about in terms of manager of the year, and I don't want to embarrass you by letting you talk about that. Who would be your manager of the year?
See, I'm slightly different because my awareness of all of the divisions, in the sense I played in all of them, apart from the Premier League, but I played through the other three. I think John Coleman down the road at Accrington's done an amazing job. Mm-hmm. I think Neil Harris has done an amazing job anyway. But if they get there to the playoffs and then if they win it, well, that's out of this world. Yeah, that's out of this world. Pep, for obvious reasons. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Pep has done a fantastic job. I like the fact, and I don't know him, but from the outside looking in, I think he learned a lot from last season. Mm-hmm. I think rightly so, a club like Man City kept that manager because in other countries, even in this country, if you're 15 points off the title, you could have been outed.
Yeah.
Now, that would have been ridiculous, but it happens. And I think it seems to me from the outside looking at it, he's learned about his team. He's gone back to a similar format that he had at Barcelona, about 10 years ago. Very much 4-3-3 orientated, fewer changes, reliant on the hardcore of top players, and then still changing when needs be, playing some great football, gluing it all together with, they've got a will and demand. Mm. There's a respect there, a teamship, if you like, you know, that counts. Mm. And of course, some fantastic football. So he is the obvious candidate, make no mistake. But behind that, I do marvel at managers who are making a lot out of a situation when they haven't always got that much. And John and Neil Harris, and amongst many others out there doing good work, but them three guys, I personally think, for many different reasons, had fantastic seasons.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. Just finally, I'm not trying to drag you away from Burnley anytime in the near future, but down the line, international management at any stage?
I don't know. I mean, you'd
be welcome in Ireland.
Yeah, I mean, I got half a team. I'm collecting. Exactly, I'm collecting. Yeah, I'm collecting. I look at it that, you know, I think Gareth, I back Gareth 100%. I like him as a bloke, but I think he'll do well. And I like he's trying to look beyond tournaments, saying, hang on a minute, we need to build year on year. Yeah, yeah. And I quite like that. It's brave. I think, you know, he'll get his question marks, but he's looking for these young players to now mature and become the next big players. And it's seemingly, I think the FA seem to be backing him with that, which I like. For me, as much experience as you can. You need as much experience. I'm learning all the time. You know, I've had a lot of experience in a short window, really, with all that's gone on. Sacked, promoted, relegated, re-promoted, stayed in the Premier League, possibly going into Europe, who knows. That's a lot to happen, you know, in a certain number of years. I just think that the more experience you get, the better chance you've got of being successful, whatever you do. If it's with Burnley, fantastic. If it's not, for whatever reason, we know the game changes, or in the future, if it's international football, whatever it may be. But my main thing is to continue progressing. I like the team to progress, but I have to be aware of my own development as well. And I think I am learning all the time. So that's my main thought at the moment, just to continue enjoying it, continue with the challenges and keep learning.
Sean Dyche, the Burnley manager, talking to Keith Andrews there. Keith also spoke to Joey Barton. We'll play you that chat tomorrow night. And he also checked in with the Irish lads at the club. By the way, still Arsenal leading Atletico Madrid by a goal to nil. 10 minutes left at the Emirates. We'll hear from John Walters in a second. But first, here's Jeff Hendrick and Stephen Ward talking about how their route into the Premier League wasn't necessarily that straightforward.
I wouldn't know. I think, obviously, it might be different for Jeff. He was probably in a different position than I was when I was his age. He was, you know, probably the top, you know, in the top two players in the whole country. Probably him and Robbie vying for that. Him and Robbie vying for it. They tell me in the car all the time he was better. But no, for me, I think, listen, I was I went away on trial and the usual, but, you know, for me, I think staying at home and learning my education at Bowes was massive for me, because I don't know how I would have reacted coming to, you know, sort of an academy. Trying to go on loan, yeah. Trying to, you know, being away from home, trying to go on loan. And when I signed for Wolves, I played men's football. I felt, you know, mature enough to go over there and deal with everything that you know, the Championship and sort of the exposure gave to you. So, for me, it was definitely the right path. But as you say, it's different for everyone. And I think if you make it to where you want to go, you know, whatever path you've been on is going to be the best one for you.
What about you, Jeff? I'm going to say the same. I wouldn't change anything. It got to a stage where I'd been on enough trials and away enough times where, don't get me wrong, I sometimes hated going on trials, being away for 4, 5, 6 days. But when it came to the stage, I'd sat down and signed with Derby, and I was just looking forward to getting away that much that I didn't even get homesick at the start. Nothing at all. My parents would give out to me at times for not calling or texting enough. I was just looking forward to getting away in with the lads, getting to know them and training every day, and I was loving it. I was lucky as well. There was five of us the same age from Ireland, so that definitely helped me settle in. But just getting in training, I got a lot fitter at times, from the age of 13 to 16 or whatever. You know, I wasn't the fittest of players, but that gave me a different side to my game. I was able to go box to box. I was learning that, and I had a good coach at the time, and I felt like I really improved very quickly in my first few years, and I could see the differences. And I loved it. Within about 8-9 months, as I got to train with the first team a few times, so I got to see how the professionals were doing it, and then that made me even more hungry.
Still at Burnley, just watched training. Johnny Walters has joined us in the indoor arena. We're just saying how spoilt young players are today, getting a lovely surface like this. You played your third 23s game on Monday.
Yeah.
How is the injury? How do you feel?
All good. Been training 6 weeks now, and been a frustrating season, and I ended up having an operation, cartilage trim, and I look back now and should have had that done at the start of the season, but I didn't for whatever reason, and here I am. So a long, frustrating season, but back ready to go now.
You're so used to playing, like, I was looking at your record, 30, 43, 44 games. It's just like year in, year out, you've been that one to be relied on to play the vast majority of games, haven't you? And so how has that been as yet? Have you been able to watch?
I don't like watching games when I'm not playing, to be honest. Little man's mad into football now, so I've been watching a lot with him though, to be fair. No, look, I don't like watching when I'm not involved, but I'll help and do what I can when I'm not involved. And I think the older you get, I think that's more of a role you might become accustomed to. Look, I want to play week in, week out, same as every player, but I know if I'm not, I'll try and help the ones that are playing.
Don't know whether you're watching on Monday night, Peter Crouch nicked your Premier League record at Stoke. Did you, were you aware of that?
I was a little aware of it.
you were a lot
because
aware
it came
of it.
Up, didn't it, on the thing. That doesn't bother me that I wanted him to score. Yeah. I put a little tweet out where it, before he even came
you?
On. Yeah, that I think he would have got a goal, but that was a good record anyway. Feel for them at the moment. Frustrating watching them.
My take on them is that I've watched his down through the years and played against his obviously a few years before that. They always tried to, in my opinion, replace the likes of you, the likes of Glenn Whelan, and then they always then had to revert back to you, to Glenn Whelan, because they know exactly what they're gonna get and they need players like you in the building. Whereas the recruitment for a long time now hasn't been at the level that it's at, and it's probably gonna cost them this year.
No, look, we felt like that when it was there. Mm. It was every year, but I think that's the case. Look, at a club you do well. You always want to make that next step, so you do well. Someone always comes in to take your place and you've got to step up to the mark. And that was the case for many years when I was there. There must have been 8 or 9 strikers coming in during the time I was there, even though I played on the right, probably 90% of the games. So you've got to step up to the mark, and that was the case. And, you know, at my time, I felt probably wasn't needed as much and felt like it was time to go at the end of last season. And yeah, say recruitment probably hasn't been right. Yeah. You look at the players that have come in, big players, big wages spent and big expectations, but there's always that worry when you step up to the next level. They might be good players, but they're not at those top clubs for a reason, or they've left those top clubs for a reason. They've got the ability, but have they got the attitude? And as you know yourself, it's not about ability most of the time.
Well, we see that here, I think, don't we, in terms of, and that's not being disrespectful.
That's not being disrespectful, not saying they don't have the ability, but something, that extra little special bit of ability. Yeah. You see players out there that have it, and sometimes they don't have the attitude to go with it. If they did have the attitude, they would be at a top four club in the Premier League, or Barcelona, or Real Madrid, or one of those teams. So they're there for a reason, and yeah, it's no disrespect to the boys here. There's plenty of ability out there, but the attitude's right from all the players.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Walters there, Stephen Ward, Jeff Hendrick as well, talking to Keith Andrews at Burnley's training centre. You can watch the full thing, the interviews with Sean Dyche and Joey Barton as well, up on offtheball.com and on our YouTube page, youtube.com/offtheball. Arsenal. It's 1-1 at the Emirates. A calamity of errors from the Arsenal defence, from Monreal, from Koscielny, and from Mustafi, and it allows Antoine Griezmann in to equalise. We'll take a quick break. We'll tell you all about it in a moment.
This is News Talk.
Welcome back. Almost time to go. Talk about that Arsenal goal then very quickly. The Atletico Madrid equaliser.
Just a long ball forward. Griezmann timed his run well, but Koscielny's still in control of the situation. Koscielny could just kick it out of play, put it out for a corner.
He's running back towards his own goal.
Yeah, he's running back towards his own goal. Griezmann, he probably is the wrong side a little bit, but he just tries to hook it away. Rather than just go and maybe dive it at it, put it out for a corner. It bounces back off the face of Griezmann, so it's into his path. Then he gets the strike away, which Ospina actually does save it. And then when he's getting back onto the line to try and retrieve the situation, Mustafi slips. And then Griezmann's just got a simple tap in, really. So it's unbelievable. I have had a tweet tonight as well from Brendan Kenny.
I don't even have time for this.
Brendan Kenny, 78, has just tweeted me. On a scale of 0 to 10, how annoying was Nathan Murphy this evening? 0 being extremely annoying and 10 being extremely annoying.
Is that just in general over the 3 hours?
Well, he's actually said hashtag Vashelko, so there you go.
I just wanted to get it right for the listeners, well, an education. You were right, Kevin, I gave you that. Tomorrow morning, we're back, 7:45 a.m. Are you on Off The Ball AM?
I am on tomorrow morning, yes.
Facebook.com/Off The Ball, Twitter, YouTube from 7:45. Just time to tell you that our mystery voice tonight was, of course, Tony Cascarino.
Just wouldn't leave off and stand next to you and just follow you everywhere.
Have you been on the lash with Tony Cascarino?
Yeah, I have.
Ho-ho, I'd say that's a night.
He's chilled, Cass. He's very chilled.
No more than yourself. Congratulations to Mark Power, who's now in the hat to win tickets to a Premier League game of his choice for next season. You get return flights, accommodation, and £250 spending money, all with thanks to Carling, official beer of the Premier League. We'll give you another chance to enter that competition tomorrow night, where we'll also be talking to Kerry's Aidan O'Mahony. We'll hear from Joey Barton, and we'll review the first round of the NFL draft. Tom Dunn is up next. Thanks to everyone involved in the show tonight. Good night.